Thanks for downloading a 3CR podcast. 3CR is an independent community radio station based in Melbourne, Australia. We need your financial support to keep going. Go to www.3cr.org.au for more information and to donate online. Now stay tuned for your 3CR podcast.
Welcome to a special edition of A Rounding Biologist's Dream on International Day of Disability. The theme of today's show is expression through art. I've got a very special guest presenter with me in the studio right now, Alistair Baldwin.
Hey there, how are you?
Now, Alistair was a state finalist in the National Royal Comedy. Now, Alistair, what does International Day of Disability mean for you?
I guess it's just an annual day where people get around a hashtag, which is IDPWD or IDPWD, and I guess they talk about their experiences with disability, and I think it's a great way to elevate these narratives.
Well, this is about the seventh year I've done a show on International Day of Disability. I've done the breakfast show a couple of times, and that meant analysing the media, and for six consecutive years, we found a total of, I think it was about six articles, or one a year, about International Day of Disability in mainstream media. But today we're talking expression through art. I've got some very special guests. And the first interview I've got is a lady called Larissa McFarlane. She did an art exhibition called Grandstanding, Not Handstanding at Footscray Community Art Centre earlier this year. She did a fantastic speech called Disability Pride, and that's the first interview we're going to play. And we're going to take that right now. Good afternoon. Welcome to A Rambling Biologist's Dream on International Day of Disability, 3rd of December. My name is Rafael Caleb, and we have got a really big show today. We're talking about disability and art, and right now in the studio I have Larissa McFarlane, an esteemed artist. Welcome to A Rambling Biologist's Dream, Larissa.
Thank you. It's great to be here.
Now, Larissa, as an artist, how many exhibitions approximately have you done this year? There's been quite a few.
Yes, there's been quite a few. I'm sorry, I can't actually remember the answer to that question. There's been a few. I like exhibiting my work. I think that I make work to create, to communicate and create conversations, and so I just show it whenever and wherever, and then I forget about it.
Well, I said a number of the places that I recall the exhibitions, there was Grandstanding, Not Handstanding.
So that's the show that's currently on right now. That's like my solo exhibition. It's probably my biggest, most important show to date. And that's at Footscray Community Arts Centre. And yeah, it's called Grandstanding, Not Handstanding. That's why it's the best show, because it's got the best title ever.
Well, Grandstanding, Not Handstanding, is it? Larissa, what is the trademark of your artwork?
Okay, I'm going to throw you out and just say it's printmaking. But I know that's not the answer you want, because I am a printmaker. That's my, you know, my favoured medium. But I also have this practice of handstanding. And I started doing it as a way of managing myself, managing my pain and my trauma and my tears and my distress and everything. And I was very secret about it. I did one every day I've been doing one every day for 13 years. But for about the first 8 years, I didn't tell anyone. I kept it a big secret. And then I was like, hang on a sec, I'm really good at this now. I should be proud of this. Why am I hiding it? And I knew why I was hiding it. It was because it was attached and associated with my brain injury, my disability. And these are all things that we're taught to be ashamed about. And so slowly but surely, I've been sort of putting my handstands out in the public space. And in the last year, so it's 13th year, and it also happens to be the 18th year of my brain injury, so I'm, you know, all for, like, celebrating the milestone. I've been, like, really putting them out there and pasting up these images of myself in handstands in the street, in the exact places where I actually do a handstand. So I started, the idea originally was about creating, like, this sort of map in my head of all the safe places that I could do a handstand. And so it was creating a sense of safety for myself in, you know, in this context of the trauma that I experience. But it also now is sort of about joy. And I mean, it's always been about joy. But for other people, it's also this sort of celebration I'm trying to communicate.
Well, at the Grandstanding, Not Handstanding exhibition, you did a sensational speech on the opening night. It was called Disability Pride. How would you like to go through and read Disability Pride.
Yes, well, I am prepared. I have brought my speech that I gave that night, and it was a really important. It was an important night. It was a really, really, really big important night for me, and it really marks sort of like a bit of a milestone in my journey towards what we call disability pride. So I started my speech by acknowledging that we're standing on the stolen lands of the Kulin Nation, and I then moved on to say that I also acknowledge Australia's shameful history of incarcerating thousands of people in institutions because they were disabled or had mental illness, and to acknowledge that there are still such institutions operating today. And I want to honour those disability advocates and activists who have come before us, and also pay my respects to those current disability freedom fighters, many of whom are in the room today. It is your actions, your written words, and your friendships that have led me to standing up here today. So grandstanding, not handstanding. I'm not going to talk about my handstands because you can read about that in the catalogue. Well, but I am going to tell you that this is the 18th year of my brain injury. I had a brain injury in 1998, and it was really tough for a very long time. And I think it was about 7 years that I wasn't sure if I would ever have a life again that I would consider worthy or good. But although brain injuries never go away, they almost always improve. I worked hard. I got lucky. Things fell into place. I got safe housing. I made some friends, and I found a way to start my art practice. But one of the things that has had me really baffled throughout this brain injury journey, which has included mental illness and physical disability, the thing that has really baffled me has been all the shame. And I know that this shame is a common identified experience amongst many people with disabilities. I felt shame at the fact that I couldn't always follow a conversation like I used to, or find the right words to explain myself. I feel shame that sometimes I am so emotionally overreactive to everything. I feel shame that I didn't have a job. I feel shame that I can't engage socially like I did before. And sometimes I feel ashamed of my brain injury. And I was ashamed of the shame. And I couldn't work out where it came from. These messages of shame came from everywhere. Indeed, when I was first at art school at TAFE, which was about 8 years ago, a couple of well-meaning artists took me aside at different times and advised me that I should take out the reference to my brain injury in my artist statement because it would prejudice the way my art would be seen. They said I was lucky, I could pass as normal, and I should take advantage of that. I was really confused because I am only an artist because of my brain injury. Indeed, this is the gift of my brain injury. But I'm sad to say I tried to follow their advice. I took my brain injury out of my art practice, and even though I continued to work in disability self-advocacy, it has taken many years to put it back into my artistic identity. And that's because in the last few years, I finally started to understand where this shame comes from. My shame is because I have internalised society's attitudes towards people with disabilities and mental illness. You see, our society doesn't value people with disabilities. We don't give them jobs, unless it's, you know, for a couple of hours in a sheltered workshop. People with disabilities can't access the same level of education. Even accessing healthcare is not equal for people with disability. 45% of people with disabilities live below the poverty line. We are seen as a burden, a tragedy, something that must be managed or cured. And because I have internalised these attitudes, every time my brain injury or my mental illness or my chronic pain makes me feel different, I feel shame. And so I made a promise to myself for my 18th anniversary last year that I would come out and be proud. Because, you see, anniversaries are a big thing in brain injury culture. For most people with brain injury, it is the most important day of the year. But for most of us, we mark it alone. And I get that because it's a tough day. But I want to create a space so that we can mark our anniversaries without this shame. I'm not trying to negate the losses and the heartaches and the struggles that accompany brain injury and other disabilities, but I want us to be proud of our achievements. So I've been practicing disability pride this year. It is one way of challenging that shame that can be so crippling at times, this shame that is not ours, but it belongs to a wider society that has yet to recognise our value. So here's to disability pride and celebrating birthdays.
Thank you very much, Larissa. I was at the handstanding grandstanding, not handstanding, actually opening night. And when Larissa gave that speech, it touched me in a special way. I believe that actually it set aside a special day in disability history to actually call it Disability Pride for what it actually was, to celebrate the fact that a person actually had a disability. And relating this to a theme of art, as Larissa pointed out in her speech, she developed art because of an acquired brain injury. And I think it's over this past 12 months, they've had a film in Mojo Film Festival that's been grandstanding, not handstanding. There was images of Larissa at the National Gallery of Victoria in the main foyer, absolutely everywhere.
The Art Centre.
At the Art Centre.
Next door, yep.
And there was the Invisible Exhibition, and there's also an exhibition at Skins Gallery as well. And lastly, I'd like to remember one little part about this. I think you're doing a residency at the moment to do special artwork.
So part of my exhibition at Footscray Community Arts Centre, where I have an exhibition, but I also have a little handstand spot in the gallery. I'm actually using the gallery as a studio, so I'm there making work. And one of the things I'm doing is working with some of the other artists that work at Footscray Community Arts Centre in the Art Life program. So these are artists with disability. And we're developing and creating this amazing big paste up. It's can't be revealed, the details, but it's going to be amazing. And it's going to be launched actually on December the 3rd. And it's very exciting.
Well, it is very exciting, is it? Let's go back this and talk about...
Oh, can I just go back to what you were saying about disability pride? It is really interesting because we don't... I think it does feel like a new concept, but I was astounded to find out that disability pride is a really big movement internationally. In America, across the states, they actually have annual pride marches, disability pride marches, and I just was like, where is it here in Australia? It isn't. So I think that's why I'm really keen to sort of talk about it, because there's space. We're ready for it.
We are ready for it. And like one of the things about becoming an artist because of the acquired brain injury.
Yeah.
Because it's an acquired disability, acquired brain injury, is Larissa, I think you're a 50-year medical student.
So that was a long time ago. That was about 7 years before my brain injury. That was the prior Larissa. So I had my brain injury at 29. So yes, the prior Larissa did actually go to medical school and fortunately saw the light before she reached the end of her sixth year and she got out. And I'm actually really grateful that I got out. And I'm also really grateful that it wasn't my brain injury that prevented me from continuing, because I wouldn't have the same abilities today to be able to undertake that. But I got to make that choice. And then I went on to do a lot of different other stuff, including working at 3CR. But after my brain injury, all my abilities have changed. All the ways that I do things are different. I was very much into reading and I was an intellectual and I had this amazing photographic memory, which is completely overrated, by the way. Yeah, so I had to sort of change and look at other ways of being me. That took a long time. I'm not saying that was an easy journey. Brain injuries, as you know, because you know many people and you've had your own experiences, but they take a long time to come to terms with. And I think one of the biggest things about brain injury is this switch where you're suddenly a new person and you're suddenly this different person with a different personality, and often there's a name change.
Well, there can be many things that actually happen as people go through life's journeys, but with your artwork is that you've got the current exhibition.
Yep.
Now, what are the actual details of that exhibition?
It's at the Footscray Community Arts Centre, which is in Moreland Street in Footscray, 45, I think, and it's right on the Maribyrnong River. It's a really beautiful spot. And the exhibition's open every day except Sunday. And I'm in there on and off. You'll have to track me down and find out if I'm going to be there if you want to see me. And, and it's open until the 9th of December.
And with the 9th of December, so it's very easy to actually find Larissa. She's very, very colourful.
I have lots of rules in my life. And one of the rules I made when I had my brain injury was not to wear black. Never again. So I have a challenge. Every day I have to find colour. Yep.
Well, is that's just pure entertainment. Now, Larissa, if people would like to buy your artwork, what would prices actually start at?
Oh, well, what a question you've thrown me. I think it depends on the context. I actually am a bit partial to giving my artwork away, which is why I put it in the street. You know, I share it on street walls, and I have at times also made little zines, which is a way of giving away artwork. In the gallery, framed, my frame art, fine art, liner cut prints, framed, started around $250.
Right, and the last question for the interview, Larissa, is what are your plans for International Day of Disability?
Oh, going to be launching this great new paste up. I'm moving away from handstands, and we're going to be pasting up other things associated with disability pride on this amazing, amazing big wall. It's huge, and it's going to be a challenge, and it's going to be great. But that's what we'll be launching from 1 till 3. So everybody, you know, if you're local and if you've got nothing better to do on this amazing day, this International Day, come and join me at 1 o'clock at Footscray Community Arts Centre.
Thank you very much. This is Rafael Caleb, and I've been talking with Larissa McFarlane, an extraordinary artist, on International Day of Disability. Thank you very much for your time, Larissa.
Thank you so much for the opportunity, Rafael.
You're listening to 3CR Radio.
Disability Day 2017. 3CR from 7 a.m. to 7 p.m. on Sunday, December the 3rd. Most of the shows you know, with lots of surprises chucked in along the way. Go to 3cr.org.au to check out the grid for the day. You'll enjoy it.
Welcome back to 3CR, Rambling Biologist Dream, special theme, Expression Through Art. The first interview we had was with Larissa McFarlane, an extraordinary artist. And what does disability pride and how do you celebrate it? What does that mean to you, Alistair?
Disability pride means, I guess, being unapologetic about asking for accessibility. It means not being ashamed of mobility devices and stuff like that. It's celebrating, you know, fashion through cripple punk kind of aesthetic. It's, you know, just making sure that I don't, you know, push my voice down in an abled person's world.
That is fantastic. And now a little bit more about disability pride, that the exhibition Larissa is talking about, that is at the Footscray Telephone Exchange, which is now at the corner of Irving and Nicholson Streets in Footscray. There are a lot of paste-ups there. I have seen what's available there. It is a big celebration about people talking what was important to them in their disability world in a public arena. Now, the next interview I have got for you, it's a lady called Sarah Barton. She was the director-producer of a documentary called Defiant Lives. She's talking with a lot of disability activists. That's what the film's about. And I've got Sarah, and we're going to take that interview right now. Welcome back to A Rambling Biologist Dream. We're doing a theme of expression through art. Right now, I have got Sarah Barton, director and producer of Defiant Lives, on the line. Welcome to the show, Sarah.
Hi, thank you for having me.
Now, Sarah, tell us about Defiant Lives.
Well, Defiant Lives is a feature-length documentary about the rise and triumph of the disability rights movement. It covers disability rights activists in Australia, the US and the UK. So, and it looks at how all those activists way back in the early days in the 1960s and 70s and 80s really connected with each other to create a sort of new view of disability, which became known as the social model of disability. So it's really looking at that history of a rights movement that a lot of people don't even know existed.
Well, it's fantastic that you've actually taken the time to produce this documentary. Now, Defiant Lives has been showing all around the world. I believe that it's gone to Ireland, it's gone to New Zealand, it's gone to Canada,
yes,
it's gone to Australia, America, Great Britain. Where else has it gone?
Look, we've certainly had screenings in many of those, you know, all of those countries. We've had a lot of a really strong season in Australia through Demand Film, which is a kind of newer film platform that kind of pre-sells tickets and fills cinemas in off-peak times. And we've had a really successful season with Demand, especially considering that cinemas, you know, generally only have about 4 wheelchair spaces. So we've had lots of other people and, of course, lots of as many wheelchair users as we can fit into most screenings. So, yes, we've had a strong season in Australia and we're just getting going on our UK and US season, and the film is certainly available on demand in those other countries. So if you go to our website, you can request a screening. And we've had screenings at film festivals in Belfast, and, of course, Sydney Film Festival, where it premiered, and a couple of others around the world are coming up too.
Now, with on-demand screening, I mean, how does that actually work? I think it's that if people have got a certain number of people together, they can contact yourself or the...
Well, no, it's actually a bit easier than that. It's basically, you can, if you wanted to... If you thought that you had enough people or you could, you've got enough networks to... bring about sort of 50 to 60 people into a cinema, you can request a screening through our website, and then we set up a screening at a time and place that suits you, and then you just basically use your own network, social network, to promote the screening. But other people can also see that the screening is on our website, and they can buy and book tickets for that as well. So it means that anyone who just simply wants to see the film can have a look on the website and go, oh, okay, there's a screening coming up in a couple of weeks, I'll buy a ticket now. But if you've got the energy to host a screening, which, of course, we love people who host screenings, and they get 5% of the box office too, so if you'd like to host a screening, then you can do that. And it's actually really easy because we have the bookings page, we take all the money and then disperse it back to you at the end of the quarter, and we book the cinema and all of that sort of thing. So all you have to do is bring the crowd along.
I mean, that's completely amazing, Sarah. Now, is it around December the 3rd, are there any screenings planned?
Yes, absolutely. We have one coming up at Crown Village Cinemas at Crown Casino, believe it or not, funny place. And we've got a great panel of people from the film, Dr. George Teleporis, Rosemary Crosley, myself, Jackie Brown, just to name a few people, are going to be talking after the film about that sort of, you know, handover, where to from now. So at 6:30 that evening, we've got a screening at Crown, and you can book tickets right up until the day of the screening. There may be some other screenings around the country. At this stage, I just don't have any others, you know, sort of immediately coming to hand, but the Crown screening. And look, there are some community organisations that are hosting screenings. So if you're connected into the various community organisations, you may see invitations to screenings around Disability Day, because there has been a big take-up from the community wanting to have their own screening.
Now, is that, I just want to make sure that I've got the time for our listeners. That's 6:30 on 3rd of December at Crown Casino.
No, 6:30 on the 4th of December. I'm sorry, I didn't make that clear. It's Monday the 4th of December, 6:30 p.m. at Village Cinemas at Crown Casino in Melbourne.
Right. Or is it like, and people book their tickets online. Now, Sarah, what are your actual plans for International Day of Disability?
Well, my own plans are that I'm going to be at that Crown screening on the 4th of December. The 3rd of December is a Sunday, and I've actually planned to go away for the weekend. which was possibly bad timing, but it was only the only weekend that I could get away. So I've got things on the Friday afternoon, the 3rd, the Monday, you know, when I get back. But the actual weekend, it's down to the beach.
Well, Sarah, with your work as a filmmaker, director and producer, that you've actually had quite a lot to do with the disability movement with the subjects you've covered?
I have. Look, I've been making films about disability for 25 years. My first film was a film called Untold Desires, which was about sex and disability. And, of course, I started No Limits, which ran on Channel 31 for, you know, more than a decade. I've made quite a few other documentaries about disability. So I do, you know, it is something that I'm particularly passionate about, and I've done, you know, a lot of films and you know, tried to use my filmmaking skills, I guess, to sort of advance the rights of disabled people in this country.
Now, are there any outside influences about why there's the interest in disability films?
Look, you know, it's always personal. So I have a daughter who's just turned 18 and she has cerebral palsy. So that really propelled me back into disability. I had actually made Untold Desires before she was born. So I had kind of some experience of disability, you know, through my filmmaking before my daughter was born. And when she was born, I felt like, well, that's, you know, a sign that I just need to stick with it and become a part of the community. And I feel like I've sort of, I guess, you know, people refer to it as being an ally of the community, and I've tried to sort of, you know, support the community in the early days as a filmmaker when it was kind of, people might find it insulting to say it was kind of inconceivable for disabled people to make films, but it was very unusual. It was not something that seemed to be a possibility. I know that disabled people work in film and don't disclose their disability. Not everyone has that opportunity. And I think times are changing now so that there's recognition of, like, you know, just because you have a disability doesn't mean you can't access, you know, you can't be a filmmaker. So times have really changed. But when I started out, you know, I felt that I had some skills that I could work with disabled people for them to tell their stories. On No Limits, we did a lot of training. We trained a lot of disabled people in television production skills. So that's kind of what I've done over the years in terms of... But you know, it's a bit different now. You know, I don't want to be telling other people's stories if they want to tell their own.
Well, is it one of the people that you had quite a lot to do with, and she was an important part of the disability movement, was Stella Young. Can you tell us about the relationship you had with her?
Well, Stella and I were really close friends. I mean, by the time she died nearly 3 years ago, the anniversary is coming up just a couple of days after International Day of People with Disability. I would have counted her as one of my closest friends. But we began making No Limits together. So Stella joined the team. She was recommended to me by a couple of other disabled people who said she was great. She was very, very young at that time, probably sort of 18 or 19. And she was a little older than that. No, probably more like sort of 22, because she was just finishing her studies to become a teacher. And she joined the team of No Limits, and, you know, we got on like a house on fire. She was very easy to get on with, and really, you know, I helped to sort of develop her skills in the media. And so, you know, by the time she was employed by the ABC, she really, you know, had done a lot of time in front of TV cameras. She understood, what was needed. So she was quite savvy by that time. And also in the last couple of years of Stella's life, we actually spent almost a whole year writing a short comedy together with a couple of other writers as well. There were four writers on the project, and that was something I look back on now extremely fondly. We made a film called Casa del Crip. I probably should have cast Stella in it, but we didn't. She was sort of very busy at the time, and we were really, you know, wanting to give other people opportunities to do things. So Stella wasn't cast in it, but, you know, perhaps we should have. But we had an enormous amount of fun in the year that we spent writing that that film and, you know, sort of getting it finished. So that was something I'm really pleased about, that we did that. And, you know, it's nearly 3 years since she died, and I miss her all the time.
Well, Sarah, just a couple of quick questions to finish up now. Is it, what is your vision for the disability movement as far as expression through art goes?
Look, I think that, you know, the arts has a huge amount to offer for disabled people in terms of expressing what's important to them. I think that, you know, if we do it right, there's a great opportunity with the rollout of the National Disability Insurance Scheme for people to have more support so they can get out and about and access the community. And I think one of the things that people will want to do is to participate in creating art. So whether that's dance, whether it's theatre, film and television, you know, the visual arts, you know, I think people want to get out, and the arts is a great way to kind of be a part of your community, to have a say, to speak about your own experiences, to share those with audiences. So I really hope that over the next, you know, decade or so, we can see a flourishing of, you know, disability art, which really address the experiences of disabled people. But there is a real risk, because at the same time as people are getting their NDIS packages, a lot of the arts groups and organisations are losing their funding in favour of individual support. So there's a little bit of a sort of behind the scenes, you know, political and cultural shift going on there. And so there's a risk that it might not go as well as we hope it does. But that would be my vision, is that hopefully more people will be out and participating in the community, and we will see a kind of increasing visibility and increasing quality and engagement with disability art.
Okay, thank you very much, Sarah. Now, the last question I've got for you is that, how do tickets purchased for the screening on December the 4th at the Casino, Crown Casino in Melbourne for Defiant Lives?
So people can go to our website, defiantlives.com, and go to cinema screenings, and there they will see a list of cinema screenings. There are a few tabs for different countries, but if you're in Australia, you know, make sure that you're on the Australian list. And that Crown Casino screening on Monday the 4th of December should be there, and you just click book now, and it's really easy. You'll be directed to the Demand Film website. And then you can buy the tickets online. So it's really easy to do. And, you know, it'd be lovely to see some of your listeners there on the night.
Okay, thank you very much for your time, Sarah. This is Raphael Caleb, a rambling biologist, talking on Expressing Through Art. I've been talking with Sarah Barton, director, producer of Defiant Lives. Thank you very much for your time, Sarah. My name is Raphael, a rambling biologist, Caleb. I've just been talking with Sarah Barton, director and producer of Defiant Lives. Now, in the studio, I've got a guest presenter with me, Alistair Baldwin. Now, you're being a state finalist, been described as an up-and-coming comedy star of Melbourne's scene. As a comedian, do you think having an attitude of a defiant life helps?
Absolutely. I don't think people are good at comedy if they don't know how to tell people... tell people some truths, tell people some harsh truths. And, yeah, I absolutely think that, you know, having a defiant life, even just the act of getting up on stage when people aren't expecting to see a disabled comedian, I think can be pretty defiant.
Well, that's a really, really, really good point about that, because a lot of people like people with disabilities just to sit down, be heard, not seen, and not actually be part of their lives. Well, it's not like that on International Day of Disability, and that's the reason that I organised the next interview. It was with a lady called Heidi Everett. She's chairperson of the Mojo Film Festival. That was a story about people's lives and what doesn't happen in a psych ward. Very appropriate for International Day of Disability. We're going to take that interview live to air right now. Welcome back to A Rambling Biologist Stream, a special theme, Expressing Through Art. We've got another very special guest on the line at the moment. We have got the chairperson of the Mojo Film Festival, Heidi Everett. Welcome to the show, Heidi.
Thanks, Raphael. Hello.
Right. Now, what is the Mojo Film Festival?
Mojo Film Festival is a film festival of short films made by people with schizophrenia and other mental illness experiences. During Schizzy Week, which is Schizophrenia Week in May. Just short films made on iPhones, little cameras, anything people have got access to.
Now, how did Mojo Film Festival start?
It started, we actually have been doing Schizzy Week for about 10 years now, so it's an independent arts event during Schizophrenia Week put on by people with schizophrenia and other mental health kind of things. And we put on live music, visual art, comedy, anything, you know, where people could get up on stage and have a bit of a an experience of revealing their story in a fun environment. And, yeah, so we've been doing that now for about 10 years. And last year we thought, let's have a go at short film too. So, yeah, now we've gone to sort of Mojo Film Festival in 2018, and hopefully that will be get as big as Skitsy Week.
Well, let's certainly hope it does. Now, let's go back to the inaugural Mojo Film Festival in 2017. Now, how many films were showing approximately that night?
I think we had around about 20 all up, and that included, you know, it was our first year, and we had films from overseas already, so that was pretty good. And we also had a guest screening from the other film festival, which is through Arts Access Victoria, and they had a couple of films on show as well. And all the other films were just from around Australia and a couple of local Melbourne people as well. So, yeah, the event went for about 3 hours all up with a bit of a break in the middle and lots of fun.
Now, is that with Mojo Film Festival, did people receive any special art training to assist them with their filmmaking this year?
We had a small little workshop happen with a filmmaker called Lindsay Cox, and that was for anyone in Melbourne who wanted to learn how to use their iPhones to make a short film. But basically we just put the call out to anyone who'd like to make a film. What was the theme? I think the theme was on something that makes me happy. And we just said, turn your phone around so it's in landscape mode, high quality, and go for it. So anything under, I think, about 3 minutes was the max. Yeah, so that was the qualification we asked for.
Now, Heidi?
Yeah?
If people wanted to actually sponsor Mojo Film Festival or come up with possible assistance for Mojo Film Festival for people to tell their stories, how could they do this?
Well, we've got a website for Skitsy Week and Mojo, and it's really easy. So it's www.skitsy.org, and Skitsy is spelled SCHIZY.org, and if you go on that website, you can contact us and say good day and let us know how you'd like to be involved, and we welcome anybody who's got experience with schizophrenia or has some kind of lived experience in mental health, or, you know, that includes everybody. So please get involved for next year and let's make it a fantastic Schizophrenia Week.
Now, so let's say if a business wanted to come up and with some sponsorship for the Skitsy Week Jam and for Mojo Film Festival, would they actually contact you through that too?
Yeah, that's probably the easiest way, because then you can see the info and a bit of the backstory as well and who's involved. We don't align ourselves pretty much with any mental health organisations. They do their thing. We're an arts kind of collaboration, so we're a bunch of people with lived experience and we're all independent, and we want to put on an event that's ours. So we're looking for people from arts backgrounds specifically to get involved and help us out. So film people, we probably will do live music as well and illustration exhibition again as well. In fact, we'll definitely do illustration exhibition. So anyone with any interest in that kind of thing, please get in touch through skitsy.org and say good day.
Now, Heidi, why is it important that people have the opportunity to tell their films or tell their stories through films?
Great question. If you've ever been in a public psych ward, you'll know just how corrupt and wrong they are. So my passion is always let's reveal, let's expose what goes on in public psych wards. They're wrong. Anyone who's ever worked in one or been in one, lived in one, visited one, you'll know that they're just corrupt places. So that something like film or songwriting or writing or illustration, it's kind of giving us the chance to expose these places in the public. So we can't take cameras into public psych wards. You know, you're not allowed to film unless you get all this approval and things, and you're not allowed to film in psych wards anyway. So my passion is to reveal what goes on in these places. They're just as painful for people who are in incarceration story. And I think something like film, short film, is a chance to recreate those scenes and those environments. So as much as, you know, Skitsy Week and Mojo is all about fun, it's all about reality too. So giving people a chance to show their stories of what goes on in these places. You know, it's all well and good to say that mental health is all about recovery, but there's a whole heap of backstory that goes on that never gets told. So.
Well, that's a very important aspect for International Day of Disability, that there is the opportunity for people to have fun doing what they're actually doing and integrating into society. Now, I said, because Skitsy Week Jam, it's been running for approximately 10 years. Now, that is, over 10 years, there's got to be some measure of success about why would people keep getting involved with it?
Well, yeah, primarily it's fun. So I love having fun and having a laugh with people. So I like, you know, I've just got into a bit of stand-up comedy and I love it because I get to have a laugh at the system that's hurt me so much. So, and I think, you know, if you can offer that kind of environment where you can, you know, have a bit of a laugh at the pain with other people who get it, then, you know, it's kind of, wow, actually, this is quite different to have to be in this kind of space. It's very, you know, it's honouring, and it's that whole survivor culture as well. So getting people together with the same kind of survivor stories is very, it's a good feeling to be around other people when you can say, oh, you know, public psych wards, and they go, yep. So I think, you know, getting those spaces together where people can talk about similar stories is always a lovely thing to be able to do.
Well, Heidi, is it among your many talents, is it, or artistic pursuits, is it you've done the songwriting, recorded music, played live music, Mojo Film Festival, illustrator, and now comedy, is that that's quite a repertoire.
I'm like Madonna. I just keep finding new ways of doing things. I get bored. So, and I don't just get bored doing new things. I do everything flat out, 110%, learn everything I can, do everything I can, and then I kind of see another door opening up and I go, ooh, what's in that room? And I'm always looking to see, like, I see what's going on down that path. So, and I think the arts is a fantastic way that you can explore different open doorways and see how you can tell your story in different ways all the time. It's not just a song you can sing about a time, but you can also draw a picture about that time, or you can make a film about that time, or you can tell a joke about that time. You know, so you can create a whole exhibition about your life or society through so many different media. It doesn't have to be the same thing.
Well, Heidi, is it, how do you feel about doing a quick, maybe 30 seconds about possible comedy about on how you actually present?
Oh, could you repeat that, sorry?
How do you feel about doing a quick 30 seconds of your comedy routine?
Oh, nothing like being put on the spot for comedy. Okay, so the word schizophrenia actually comes from two different languages, so Old Greek for schizo and Old Latin for phrenia, and so it's basically two cultures got together and created a word. That's not mental illness. That's a Nobel Peace Prize. They should be giving us certificates when we're diagnosed. Congratulations, world peace. There you go.
Well, I said thank you very much for playing along with that, Heidi, and coming at straight out off the bat. Is that because that's the professionalism that you take to all your work practices, being able to improvise, and this is on how it is, and go for it. Thank you very much for that, Heidi.
Thanks so much, Raphael. It's an honour to speak with you on this day. Thank you.
Thank you very much for your time. We've been talking with Heidi Everett the chairperson of the Mojo Film Festival and general all-round entertainer. Thank you very much.
Hi, I'm Maurice.
And I'm Mario.
And we're
Chronically Chilled. A program that aims to provide a platform to those living with chronic and invisible illness, as well as exploring topics that impact on our daily lives.
Listen to Chronically Chilled the first Wednesday of every month at 6 p.m. starting December 6th.
Disability Day 2017, 3CR from 7 a.m. to 7 p.m. on Sunday, December the 3rd. Most of the shows you know, with lots of surprises chucked in along the way. Go to 3cr.org.au to check out the grid for the day. You'll enjoy it.
Welcome back to Around the Embryologist Dream, special episode called Expression Through Art. Now, the first community announcement we did was for a new show coming up called Chronically Chilled, and they have got a special emphasis on people with a disability. Very appropriate for International Day of Disability to play that one. And another person who's being very chronically chilled, very, very patient, guest presenter, Alistair Baldwin. Welcome to your interview, Alistair.
I know. Well, I've just sat through three fantastic interviews for this hour. Now I'm a bit intimidated. I don't think I'm as interesting as all those three wonderful talents.
Well, okay. Let's actually make sure about that one, Alistair. Is that Heidi actually did a little bit of stand-up comedy there about schizophrenia. Do a quick critique of what you thought of her comedy.
Well, I thought it was fantastic. I would hate to be put on the spot without a second's warning to do some stand-up. The fact that she said anything at all, let alone something quite funny and informative. I didn't know that about the root of the word schizophrenia, and so it was educational and funny. That's the best comedy, I think.
Now, Alistair, is it the reason that you've been brought onto the show and asked specifically about comedy? You're a state finalist in National Royal Comedy early this year. You do some Master of Ceremonies work once a month as well to do with comedy and entertainment. There's been the Lemon Comedy Festival too. Now, Alistair, why is it important with people with disability play along with comedy?
Well, I think there's many reasons. One is just that, you know, when you're a disabled person living in an ableist world, it's not always that fun. So having the opportunity to have a laugh, I think, is fantastic. It's something that, you know, certainly allows me to vent about some of the frustrations I have. And, you know, I think it's also a great way to maybe educate people. I think some of the material that I do that touches on disability, I think maybe some of the abled people watching, I hope, learn to be nicer to me, or they understand what actually is appropriate behavior when talking to and about disabled people. So, yeah.
Well, as like you did some overseas travel earlier this year. Tell us about going through customs.
Oh, well, just a little bit of context. So I have a very chill, one of the most chill muscular dystrophies on the menu. So I do just have some leg braces, which is fine most of the time, except when you're walking through the metal detectors at an international airport. And then people, you know, freak out a little bit. And especially because I think people's ideas of what leg braces look like is very old-fashioned. They think about the ones that Forrest Gump wore in the first 10 minutes of Forrest Gump, or they imagine, you know, old school polio leg braces. The ones I wear are pretty cool. They look pretty, you know,
like
futuristic. Absolute fashion statement. And so I think a lot of, airport, you know, employees, they don't have appropriate disability training. They don't know that these are leg braces. And so they're like, take them off. And so I just spend, you know, an extra 10 minutes getting out of them, hobbling through metal detectors and then putting them back on just because they don't really understand disability. It's pretty frustrating.
Well, look, at that. Look, that would be especially frustrating as an international traveller, like even maybe from a cultural point of view, if you are when you're actually overseas too.
Yeah,
and well, like language barriers.
Well, I did have a very funny experience. My father lives in India, and I was visiting him earlier this year, and someone did come up to me and sort of asked me, you know, pointing at my leg braces, are these the types of shoes that Westerners wear? And so not even thinking that it was because I was disabled, but just because I was like a weird white person in India and we have a weird sense of fashion. And so in that moment, I thought it was a pretty funny, moment of misunderstanding. And in that moment, I guess I had the choice to play along with it and sort of throw all Westerners under the bus and say, yeah, that's what we consider fashion, just leg braces. It's actually very highly cool.
Well, it is very, very highly cool. And, like, you've actually had a really, really cool year, Alistair.
The coolest year.
You've been doing a degree and honours. You've got something coming up with Screenwriters Victoria?
Yes. Well, I was... I've just finished my honours working on, you know, a script about, I guess, a bit of a social satire about the NDIS, and that sort of concept was recently sort of picked up for a story development thing with, it was funded by Screen Australia and Film Victoria, so it's all very early days yet, but things certainly in terms of my screenwriting career will be interesting, and I just hope to sort of use these opportunities to get more disabled people on screens in this country. I think it's important.
Well, the NDIS, well, another, that could be short for No Disability Income Sucks. What do you reckon, Alistair?
I think that's a very funny acronym that you've just done. That's why they pay you the big bucks as a comedian. We should do a double act sometime, I think.
Well, that's, we've actually discussed, is that for the benefit of the listeners, Alistair and myself, I do know Alistair, and we actually have discussed doing a disability act about going through customs and a few other little bits and pieces, doing making that into a bit of a video and having a good laugh at each other's expense.
I did ask you to sign a non-disclosure agreement, so I'm pretty upset that you're sharing our idea before someone might steal it. I mean, come on.
Well, it's kind of like you said, Hamish and Andy would be proud of me for that one.
They're your radio icons. I can see it in your vocal quality. I get a real Hamish Blake vibe.
Well, thank you very much for that, Alistair. But the most important, like you said, you've been as a Master of Ceremonies. Whereabouts do you do your Master of Ceremonies where you're the actual MC, person on the spot, making the person, how do you get it come together?
So I am the MC for Lemon Comedy, which is a monthly comedy night that we run at Hares and Hyenas, which is a queer bookshop by day and then cool kind of cabaret venue by night. And that's a comedy night all about elevating diversity in the Melbourne comedy scene. And as an MC, it is all about, I guess, just welcoming the audience into the night, giving them a rundown of how the venue will go and, you know, maybe doing a bit of crowd work so people feel like there is a kind of dialogue. I think one of the things that can happen in comedy is that it can feel very separate and it can feel like there's a bit of a power imbalance. But, you know, I like sort of chatting with audience members and just making people feel comfortable. And I think that's the job of an MC.
Well, Alistair, with a person, if you've got a physical disability, like the fashion statement, how do you go about interacting with the audience when you're going around to maybe ask them questions or getting them involved?
I suppose I just do, you know, there are some fallbacks for kind of crowd work questions, you know, where are you from? What do you do for a living? But, you know, it's a fun comedy night, and as themes come up, as different comedians sort of bring them up, it's nice to sort of touch on that. So, you know, I'll see if anyone, you know, in the crowd has an anecdote about something, you know, relating to disability or some other kind of marginalized experience, and then we can sort of get a fun dialogue going. You know, it's nothing too heavy, it's nothing too pretentious, or we're not trying to teach people, we're just trying to have a laugh about some of these experiences.
Well, also, a really important aspect of entertainment, how do you go about finding an accessible venue?
Oh, it can be really difficult. Even just, you know, we've been setting up, I'm planning to do a couple of shows for the next comedy festival, and It's funny because there are a lot of accessible venues that just means it's accessible for audiences who are maybe in wheelchairs, but the stage itself isn't accessible. So it's sort of saying it's accessible to come see comedy, but not to do comedy. So I think finding the venues, and I think there is a bit of an onus on comedians and producers to sort of put their foot down and be like, I don't really want to do a gig in a venue that's excluding a certain, you know, section of society. So, I mean, Melbourne is great and, you know, constantly venues are, you know, updating their accessibility protocols, making sure that, you know, one show of the run has an Auslan interpretation. So things are getting better for accessibility, but there's still a lot of work ahead, I think.
I'm going to make a quick little comment about this before I ask we close up this interview. Alistair, what are your thoughts if I was to tell you that Melbourne Fringe Festival is going to be employing a community social inclusion officer specifically for people with a disability to help them put on their shows? What do you think?
I think that's fantastic. I think that every festival, I think that every company or business should have something like that. I think, you know, ableism, a lot of it isn't active. A lot of it is, you know, people just forgetting to think about disability. People aren't being malicious, but they just can't think out of their own narrow able-bodied lens. So hiring someone with a specific mandate to sort of look into making sure things are inclusive and accessible is a really great thing, and I hope that other festivals take note after Melbourne Fringe. What a great initiative.
Well, it is a great initiative. We are actually a little bit out of time here. Alistair, is it how do people get in contact with you?
Well, I put out some high-quality tweets on my Twitter, at Baldwin Alistair. So that's just my surname, and then it's like the Dewey Decimal version of my name. So you can find me on Twitter and then also on Instagram. I'm very attractive, so if you want visual social media content, Instagram's great too. That is also Baldwin Alistair. So chuck me a follow. You'll get regular updates about my next gigs.
Okay, thank you very much. This is Rafael Around the Umbrella's Caleb. I've been talking with Alistair Baldwin on International Day of Disability. My last thoughts on International Day of Disability. The DSP does not stand for destitute, starvation and poverty. Well, our guests today have been Larissa McFarlane, Sarah Barton, Heidi Everett, Alistair Baldwin. Thank you very much for joining us on the show. We're going out with a song called Angel by Heidi Everett. It's a multi-talented performer. Next up, we have got Liz Wright with Are You Looking At Me? This is International Disability. Thank you very much for listening.
Save me from the wicked things.